Columbus. This is Cranksters here on Columbus's community radio station, WCRS 102.1 and 98.3. Volunteer-run, listener-supported, non-commercial community radio for Central Ohio. Check out our website, wcrsfm.org, to volunteer, see our schedule, find out about programs, and to donate. And Cranksters is Columbus's premier bicycling radio showcase. I'm your host, Zach Hinkle. And today in the studio, we have the executive director of Consider Biking and bicycle commuter, Jeff Stevens. Hello, Jeff. How are you?
Hey, Zach. Good.
Thank you again for coming in on Cranksters. This is Cranksters number 23.
All right.
Yeah, 23 episodes. It's more than I ever thought would happen. But we've had some big news recently in the city of Columbus, and it's almost getting mainstream, as you said to me earlier. The city's bikeway plan is coming into shape.
Yeah, it sure is. The plan was created last year. It took about a year. It was really fast-tracked and was unveiled in May at our Bike to Work Week kickoff event, and City Council adopted it, I believe, shortly thereafter. So we're in the implementation phase. The plan calls for 20 years of improvements. If we had all the money, it'd sure be great if we could do them tomorrow. But it's aggressive. It is, I don't want to say progressive, but it's the plan was created by some of the best bike planners in the world. And we believe that we deserve a world-class city here in Columbus, Ohio.
Right. So one of the newest showcases of this plan is the Milton Avenue Bike Boulevard, part of the Olentangy Trail. It's been catching quite a bit of press lately. Tell our listeners all about that.
Well, Zach, the plan called for like 10 demonstration or high priority projects to be accomplished in the next 4 years to unveil for our bicentennial, and there are all kinds of things in there. Like there'll be an awareness campaign up and down High Street, but this bike boulevard on Milton Avenue is going to be a quick win, and anybody that's out there and rides up and down the Olentangy bike trail will have already seen in the last week or two the improvements. There's a section, that about a half mile section, that goes to the neighborhoods that connects these two ends of the trail in the heart of Clintonville. And what we've done is we've repaved a lot of that, and we've put down these massive road markings that say Bike Boulevard. And there will be some really progressive treatments to the intersection at North Broadway and Milton with bike boxes. Anybody that might have looked in the Dispatch, Columbus Dispatch, I believe, 2 days ago would have seen the lead editorial about that. And there was a feature last Saturday. So this is a progressive treatment that is has only been implemented in Portland, Oregon, and in New York City, and now Columbus, Ohio. And I actually just saw them a few minutes ago as I rode down here, so they've gotten some of the final striping in there. It's kind of mind-boggling.
Yeah, I agree. And this paintwork, the bike boxes, yeah, and the sharrows for the designating the boulevard. Mm-hmm. Can you explain how these bike boxes work to our listeners?
Yeah. Basically, there is, at the intersection, there is a bike lane that starts about two car lengths back from the light, and then a box up in front of the cars, right where sort of where the crosswalk is. So what this does is it illegally allows cyclists to, as I say, slam up on the right of the cars and gather in the front and to take priority at the light. It's just some people debate the safety of bike lanes in general, but this thing is so short. It just allows cyclists to get up there and get in the front. And it also, the other new issue is that there'll be a no right turn on red for cars. So this is going to create a little bit of traffic calming in the neighborhood, too, because there won't be cut through traffic. And it'll be interesting. It's a test. We'll see how people take to it. But I think we'll all be pleasantly surprised.
And is there a special paint color in this box? Or
other cities have green or something like that. Right now, I just saw them marked, outlined. I'm not sure when and if it'll be filled here. But, the important thing is for this whole stretch of this half-mile stretch between these two terminus of the trail is that this is probably the most heavily trafficked, bike-trafficked roadway in the city and county. So what the city has done is they've come and made an improvement to an area that's highly used by cyclists. And some might say, well, why not Alum Creek Drive or some other place? Well, they know that by doing something quick here, they'll have a quick win, and all the cyclists that use it will say, wow, maybe they are going to do stuff. And mm-hmm. yeah, they are. They're doing stuff. All right. So it's just a quick win, and should sort of send a message that they're thinking about bikes and prioritizing them.
I believe also I read that there's a new signal to trip the bicycle so you don't have to endanger yourself by going over that curb light,
mm-hmm.
and also so you don't get into that situation we often get at censored intersections where you have to have a weight or a lot of magnetic power to trip that,
right.
and you end up running the red light just instead of waiting there forever.
I saw it all dug up a week or two ago, and it was filled in when I came down here a half hour ago. But I assume that if they put a sensitive, actuator on there, and I just didn't see it go in, so I trust it's there. that was the point.
Right on. Is there any? I know that along the Milton, length of this, there's this additional paint and markings and sensors. But what about on the northeast, the east north Broadway stretch? Are there any additional signage there?
There's going to be, I believe, some signage out on Broadway to indicate that they are crossing a bike boulevard. Mm-hmm. And bike boulevard really isn't the appropriate term, because in other cities, a bike boulevard would actually maybe be blocked off from one end and really discourage cars from getting in there. So we're just kind of using that name for a road that's sort of prioritizing bikes.
Yeah, I really like the concept of bike boulevards. I think they're a little bit more inclusive, fair, and I think have more potential than bike lanes.
Mm-hmm.
And I just can think of plenty of roads that make excellent boulevards, like Denison Avenue, mm-hmm. connecting the southern OSU campus with Goodale Park.
Mm-hmm.
Hamilton Avenue through Linden,
sure.
is practically a boulevard already.
Mm-hmm.
Neal would be a good one, too. Bryden Road. I mean, mm-hmm. I just think, I don't know, it just seems so easy to put some paint down, but I'm sure I'm being naive. yeah, that's pretty neat, the Milton Avenue Bike Boulevard. I haven't been there yet, but check it out soon. What are some other things? You've been working with the city, going to meetings, being an executive director of a biking advocacy group. What else is going on with the Bikeway plan?
Well, probably the most important thing right now is that we've got a group of stakeholders with the city helping rewrite or update, I should say, the traffic code as it relates to bicycles. So that's, all the stuff about, all the language about riding as far to the right as practicable, and some of the issues around bikes on sidewalks, issues about, harassment from cars, really putting all this stuff in the code. And the point here is there was a law that went into effect in Ohio about 2 years ago, I believe, called the Better Bike Law, I think that's the name of it. And that set some parameters and clarified things for the state of Ohio. So what we're doing in Columbus is trying to update our code, our traffic code, so that it's congruent with Ohio, cleans up some of the ambiguous and or conflicting language we had in our code. And also, we're going to add stuff that will be progressive. We're looking at, 13 to 16 other cities across the country for their best practices to maybe add some additional things that will enhance and make our code the best.
Right. Do you think there's anything in these, in the new codes, though, that then are translated to law enforcement and into like BMV manuals?
There's an issue on another front that we're working with, trying to work with ODOT, Ohio Department of Transportation, to, we've been advocating and trying to get bicycle education or components of it into driver's ed education. Even one question on the test, but it would be a part of the curriculum and classroom and on the road for young drivers to expect bikes and what do they do. So yeah, there's there are things we're doing on all fronts. You asked me something else before that, and I
Just other developments with the bikeway plan. What's next?
Yeah. Well, that's I would encourage anybody that's interested or has an interest in helping provide feedback for this traffic code to reach out to us at Consider Biking, www.considerbiking.org. Write me, Jeff@considerbiking.org. And we're going to have a very short turnaround time to provide feedback. And it'll literally be starting in about a week. So, and we'll only have about a week or two. And, you know, I've got about a dozen volunteers right now, people that have raised their hands, some of our local attorney friends, guys and gals that commute every day and are users of the law, you know, have raised their hand and are sort of poised and waiting to see what, you know, has been come up with and to provide feedback from a user end.
Awesome. So you were telling me a few times in the last weeks about a bikeway map, a Central Ohio cycling map that you've been working hard at getting out, making a reality.
Yeah, here we're, you know, I'm hesitant to go public and say, yeah, we're going to have this thing done by this coming spring. But a usability map, you know, is what we're after. Every, you know, you go to any city around the country, go into the local bike shop, you know, when you're visiting and say, I need a map, and they'll pull it out and say, you know, where you stand, what kind of ride do you want to do? You know, here are the roads, they're marked green, yellow, and red, you know, something like that. Well, Columbus hadn't had anything like that for years. There was something, you know, about 15 plus years ago. But it's a desperate, huge need. And particularly this past spring with everybody getting out on their bikes in mass, one of the big questions was, well, how do I get from A to B?
Mm-hmm.
And what roads are safe? And, you know, if we had a map, that would really help. That would help rate the roads. So the city of Columbus, as part of the bike plan, does have, I believe, a little pot of money and a commitment to do a map. And what we have done, Consider Biking, is we said, hey, you can't do just Columbus. You got to do our entire metropolitan region, because there are, you know, tons of people that work in Dublin and need to know how to connect there to ride their bikes to work there, or people, you know, live in Westerville or Gahanna and want to ride into, you know, OSU or downtown to work. So we have to have a full regional map. And we are close. You know, I've been sitting down with the engineers downtown the last couple of weeks and, you know, talking about how do we rate these roads and dealing with the issues of data. And I think we're really close to figuring out how to do it and, you know, pull the trigger to make it happen this winter. So that's everybody's intent, so that when the snow melts, we'll be able to, and people are saying, hey, we got this bike to work week thing coming up.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have the maps out there and everybody can figure it out.
I think maps are rad. Well, if anybody wants to add a public comment, you go to considerbiking.org once again.
That's correct.
Jeff Stevens. All right. Well, we're talking to Jeff Stevens here on Cranksters on WCRS 102.1 and 98.3 FM. Go to our website, WCRSFM.org, find out more. How to volunteer, donate, participate in community media. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back with Jeff Stevens. Here's a little bit of Raven from Columbus, Ohio recording company Owl Studios. We'll be right back. there is Raven from our recording studio here in Columbus, Ohio. Probably check out Raven on MySpace.com with all the other musical groups. But anyway, we're back here on Cranksters on WCRS. We're talking with the executive director of Consider Biking, Jeff Stevens. We're talking about the bikeway plan earlier. And now going to another side, something Jeff participates in, Race Across America. What is the Race Across America, Jeff?
It's an insane event that it's the world's toughest race, bike race, period. It's sort of the tagline. It's an ultra endurance event. It's the biggest, oldest, I don't want to say oldest, but it's considered the pinnacle ultra endurance cycling event in the world. Totally different creature from the type of bike racing that you might see on the streets of Grandview or when you turn on the TV for the Tour de France or whatever, or triathloning. It's, you know, racing for 24 hours and beyond. And so the Race Across America was just that. You know, you start on one coast and, you know, the clock doesn't stop till you get to the other. And, you know, I rode for, you know, probably 22 plus hours at a stretch and then would, you know, sleep for 2 or 3 hours and go again.
So it's where's it start and where's it end?
When I did it, it was Portland, Oregon, down to Florida. So it's usually 3,000 miles, and yeah, it's traditionally, you know, Southern California over to somewhere on the Eastern Seaboard. Of late, it's been Atlantic City or Annapolis, but usually 3,000 miles, and it takes a, as I say, a big heart and a little brain, but it takes many, many years to, you know, to qualify for it and to prepare, and the logistics are pretty daunting.
Yeah. Are you allowed to take your own route, or is there a set route?
Oh, no, there's a set route, and, you know, there are checkpoints. There are like 60 checkpoints across the country, and I had a crew of most, you know, solo racers will have a crew of, you know, 7 to 10 people, and I had like 7 people and 2 vehicles. So there's always a vehicle with me. And at night, you can't move unless there's a vehicle behind you. Well, you know, you got to have all these flashing lights and stuff. So it's, and the cool thing is, I had this exterior stereo system like blasting right behind you, and that's sort of the fun part of it. But believe you me, after about 2 or 3 days, you start dealing with sleep deprivation and hallucinations, and it's a you get pretty out there.
All right. So I want to hear it, you know, it's like a pacing story. Like, okay, you start in Portland and you go to Florida. How long did that take? This is mind-boggling.
Yeah. For me, I was 12 days. And I was
12 days?
Yeah, I was slow. The winter of my year did it in 9.5.
I don't believe it.
Yeah. Things really degrade after a couple days. And I have crewed for other people before I did it and while I was trying to qualify. And it's amazing to see these guys that could just ride circles around you any day of the week. You know, just these monstrous guys. There have been Tour de France racers that have raced in it, and they turn into, you know, very humble, mush people after a couple days because it just totally takes everything out of you. And I've come to, you know, for many, many years, my little niche is I've always enjoyed racing 24-hour races.
Yeah.
And so that, I know it sounds crazy, but.
So you sleep 3 hours. So how long does it take to get across Oregon then? Seems so fast.
Let's put this in perspective. When I was doing 24-hour races and sort of in shape and peak, I was a 400-mile in 24 hours guy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I would literally during that 24 hours be clipped out of my pedals for less than 5 minutes during the whole thing. And that would be to, you know, to go to the bathroom and maybe put on a long sleeve jersey or something, or my lights. So you have crew handing things off to you, and it can be pretty intense. But, you know, when you tack on days for the Race Across America, you know, you degrade very quickly into, you know, your speed.
I saw earlier you showed me a medal or a token of the race. Is that your medal for completing it?
Yeah, it's Yeah, it's you don't get a whole lot out of it. This is my I share with people. This is I said, have you ever seen a $15,000 watch?
Well, yeah.
This is that's what it cost us to do it, and they gave me a watch at the end, and it's a little, for those that can't see, it's a little cheap like Casio watch, and I joke that that's my high end watch.
Race across America. What'd you eat along the way? That I remember, I rode cross country once, but it took me 36 days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm kind of that's not very impressive to you probably, but
no, that's I've done that too. And I look forward to doing it again.
But I remember the best part was all the food you could eat, anything you want, all you want.
Yeah, I was pretty much in the serious ultra endurance athletes will, a lot of them will think it's different for many people, but most will do liquid fuels, and I was, I was taking in about 500 or so calories per hour, a bottle of liquid fuel every hour, and kept a very strict log of, I have my crew track it. And at the end of the race, I went back and analyzed it. And, if I had to do it again, I'd probably take in more fuel. But about halfway across, I started eating solid food, just to, things like cookies and, breakfast biscuits and little treats. So they say if you get to so-and-so, we'll give you a, you get a donut or a cookie or something. And then, but I was real steady with that liquid fuel.
Wow, what was the bicycle? What was your machine?
Well, one of them sitting out in the room. The other way, I
Bianchi.
Yeah, I'm titanium bikes. I had three of them, and I had one real light steel one that I used for the mountain passes and stuff. But it's mostly about comfort, and my platform on all of them is dialed in the same. And I would spend basically 90% of the time in the aero bars, both as a speed aerodynamic thing, but also to take pressure off hands.
Yeah.
I mean, you touch the bike, everybody says, well, what about your butt? Well, you touch the bike in three places, and let me tell you, the hands and the feet get to hurting pretty bad too.
That's a good point. Never thought about that.
Oh yeah.
Excellent. What do you think, Peter? Think that's a good point?
I think it's a real good point.
It's a co-guest, Peter Brown, in the background. Race across America. You said you've done it once?
Yes.
And what's the history of this race in general, though? How long goes back?
27 years. It was started in 83, four guys. Lon Haldeman is probably the name that most people associate with it. And there's been, back in the early years, there was a America's first Tour de France racer, Jonathan Boyer, Jacques Boyer, kind of got talked into doing it. And he badmouthed all these guys. He said, oh, these guys aren't real athletes. I'm just going to ride faster and sleep more. Well, he found out that these ultra-endurance guys were still pretty darn fast, and he had to change his tactics and he finally kind of caught back up and eased past the guy at the end to win, but he was humbled. And
what you said, the record was 9 days.
Oh no, it's like eight days. The course varies. So the course I did was probably the most mountainous course they've ever had. And people look at me because I'm a big guy. My claim to fame is I'm the largest, anecdotally, the largest body mass to have ever finished. And people say, why would you do it on a course that had so much climbing? And I say, well, when it's time to do it, you just got to do it, when the opportunity comes. And now they actually, in the last 10, 12 plus years, they've had a lot of relay teams doing it. And I would highly encourage anybody, there's been a lot of people talking around here about getting together a team of 2, 4, or 8 to do it. And I'd be welcome. We had a young gentleman from Canal Winchester that was on a team last year, and team type 1 diabetics. And I would, if anybody is interested, hey, give me a call. And, I know I'd love to help people. I did one team race over in Europe, and it's a blast. You don't deal with all that sleep deprivation, and you ride faster but shorter,
Peter, are you interested in doing the Race Across America?
I'd love to, but I don't think I got the bike. But I got a question for you. What was the worst mountains you passed? Which of the
Peter,
you did?
Peter wants to know, what's the worst mountains?
I don't know. Oregon was surprisingly hard. I went through Colorado from sort of northwest to southeast, and Some of those were tough for me because I actually had some pneumonia issues, and I was actually in an emergency room and coughing up blood some. But those were demoralizing, a little challenging, but I got through that. And surprisingly, the Ozarks down in Arkansas were a little challenging. Most people would say when they get to the Appalachia, it's really hard because it's steeper, shorter, and steeper.
And you're at the end of the race.
Yeah. I've climbed on many other races and tours. I've climbed a lot of mountains.
All right. Well, unfortunately, we have to maybe talk more about the Race of America on another episode of Cranksters, but we're out of time, folks. The weekend's here. I want to thank my guest, Jeff Stevens, Executive Director of Consider Biking. Go to considerbiking.org. I want to thank assistant volunteer in here, Marisa, and side guest host, visitor Peter Brown, for his commentary. But anyway, this has been Cranksters on WCRS 102.1, 98.3. Have a good weekend, Columbus. Peace out.